This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special Shake Them Ropes WrestleNomics mashup podcast here on voicesofwrestling.com. Rob McCarron here alongside Jeff Hawkins, as well as Mookie Ghana, Chris Harrington, the man with all the numbers and stats and everything and everything and everything. Chris, welcome to your show mixed with our show.
Hey, it's great to be here. I'm so glad we could do this and do it with a pristine audio quality that I can never deliver to my listeners.
Yeah, we were, before you came on the line, Jeff and I were cutting a promo on Blog Talk Radio, which, you know, nothing against Blog Talk Radio. It's a great way to get podcasts out there.
No, speak for yourself. I have everything against Blog Talk Radio, but continue.
It's one of those things where it's a website that is free, where you can get your content out there. It may not sound the best, but that's what's going to happen when it's free. But it's a way for people to get out there who wouldn't normally have a chance to do so. So it's, and it's pretty easy, right? I mean, Chris, you use Blog Talk Radio for your show every time. It's not difficult to use, is it?
It isn't, but it's funny because I've been podcasting for a long time. I just take long breaks. Uh-huh. Like I started in 2005 doing a podcast, and it, you know, at the time I would edit it all myself, do it through Skype, and then fix all the little things. And as I've gotten older, much like my physical shape has just deteriorated, and my caring about the quality for my listeners, and so now I've reduced the amount of time I spend on the audio and kind of upped it on the Excel formatting. So,
right,
you know, it's a trade off of all kinds.
Absolutely, and hey, if the content is good, people will find it, and people will put up with, you know, minor things like poor audio quality. But luckily, this week we're gonna have good audio quality. As long as Skype works well, which I'm hoping it really does, so far so good. We're going to talk about some of the business aspects. We're going to talk about the WWE Network conference call happening the day after WrestleMania, in which they promised to lay out the 2015 programming schedule, as well as give an update on the level of subscribers as of WrestleMania Day. So that could be an interesting day for everybody as we wait for the post-Mania Raw, which is the big event of the weekend. We are also going to talk probably a little bit about maybe some Raw ratings leading up to it. I know, Chris, you had some topics that you want to get to, so we're basically going to get to a lot of stuff today. We may want to open just because it's happening today, and we were talking about a little bit about it before we got on the call here. But the death of Perro Aguayo Jr. Is breaking here as there was a match in Tijuana last night for AAA. Rey Mysterio was involved, Manic was involved. And Perro Aguayo, via an accident in the ring, has lost his life at the age of 35. I know we're not all big Lucha followers, or at least, Chris, I don't think you are either. I know Jeff and I aren't the biggest Lucha followers, but we have all heard of Perro Aguayo Jr. And, you know, Dylan Hales on Twitter puts him over as one of the most charismatic guys in all of Mexico. It's a sad day for wrestling anytime you see someone die that's currently involved in wrestling, especially when it happens in the ring like it did in this case. So do you have anything to say about the death of Perro Aguayo, Chris?
One thing I always do is I like to look at Wrestling Observer, the newsletter awards, to get a feel for what was someone's kind of recognition in the time frame each year that they were kind of being recognized for. A lot of times there's guys that are kind of quietly great for very long times, and we just kind of pass them by year over year. But Perro is a really interesting guy because, of course, he won Rookie of the Year when he debuted back in it was the 95 voting that he won, and it was really just interesting. You know, the other guys in that year with him were KGB, Chris Canyon, not a lot of other people you'd recognize, mm-hmm. El Puerto Rico, and Moss Man, but. What's just kind of interesting is to see, like, you know, how he progressed from such a young age, because I think he was still a teenager when that happened, to the, you know, 20 years in the business here, almost doing different things and showing up as he was so charismatic. And of course, with all the feds and things he was doing, no real matches jumped out to the list there, which is not unusual because Lucha doesn't usually do very well. But, you know, he was up even as, you know, 2008 was still being in the top 10 for Luthez Performer of the Year and Most Charismatic and things of that nature. Unfortunately, you know, one of the last times he was mentioned was back in, I think it was 2011, when it was the cancer issue that came up with him. And so he's definitely one of those people that I think had a lot of things going on in his life and a lot of stories and lived a big life. And just so strange. And that video, of course, being on the internet now from that match, where you can definitely tell something is wrong with this man. And the match is kind of continuing with this guy in the corner, literally dying before your eyes, mm-hmm. which is just very unnerving, I guess is the easiest way to say it. But it's just one of those things that you can't tell. Is it a freak accident as a result of some kind of bodily issue that was happening with the guy? Or was it just whatever it was? But very unfortunate, very, very sudden for us. I don't really have much more to add beyond that, just because I didn't watch a lot of Lucha. And so I don't have a good fond memory that I can bring up about him one way or the other, except for to say that I think it's really scary, you know, how it started off this whole run for Rey Mysterio here with all that chaos going on with Reyes de Rey. And then now this, it's been quite a week.
Yeah.
I think unnerving is the perfect word for that video. I watched it and I found myself, I know nothing about Lucha, I'll admit that, but I found myself getting unnecessarily angry watching the video. Cause as you see him basically ragdolling the ropes, they're continuing the match in the ring as opposed to clearing out to another side of the ring. I get the whole the show must go on thing, but if you can tell that there's something wrong, A, someone needs to get in there, and B, everybody else needs to clear out to the other side while they deal with it. And the other thing is there's always that natural reaction of, well, what can we do to prevent this? And I'm thinking, there's really nothing, because even in all sports, especially your contact sports like football and MMA and whatnot, it's never the things you expect to be injured by that hurt you. It's always the things that you're not seeing, like an offensive lineman getting leg whipped by his own guy when he's trying to make a block, and that tears his ACL and he's out for the season. These are the things that get you. I mean, this thing was a rope hit him in the head the wrong way, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's the going explanation. And I'll just say that, you know, there's a lot of guys who have told stories about how they and their partner will try and do a, you know, double go off the ropes and do something. And one guy will be a little bit faster than the other and the rope will be snapping back and it'll hit them. And I can remember, I think it was one of the Hardys was talking about it, how they got knocked loopy in a match one time when they tried to do that. And, you know, if you're ever on the other end of that, where you get knocked in your head with one of those ropes, it hurts a lot. And it will lock you loopy. And so it's just like any other head injury, right? You know, you have that potential that something terrible is going to happen, catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I know I've kind of campaigned to bring back the types of ropes where you have cables in them, but these are the types of ropes that'll do that to you, as opposed to, say, the WWE softer style ropes. Although those are they're not just as dangerous, but there is that potential there.
So just a complete bizarre thing to happen. And just one of those that, you know, I think one thing, Rob Viper was posting a whole bunch of pictures from that show, and I saw a dive. I can't remember whether it was that show or it was from a different show, where a guy was standing on, oh my God, he's standing on top of the Titantron, essentially, you know, the big screen. He jumps off, and I think he's going to do a dive on the guy. Nope, the guy is lying on the ramp, and he just basically frog splashes him on the ramp, no give whatsoever. And I just thought, my God, if this was in CZW, I would believe it. But I did not think this was happening in 2015 indie Mexican wrestling right now. But yes, it is. And so just amazing what it is that guys are doing to themselves at different times. And then you see something like that, and it just makes very little sense when you try to put it together.
Yeah, and unfortunate too. But, you know, one of the things people look to is the videos of these incidents. And it's hard to have these things not show up on video now with the way of, you know, cell phones and smartphones. Like, there's going to be probably several videos at different angles of all this, and people are going to watch it. It's a sad thing. And, you know, there's people out there that are that always want to look at who to blame for something like this. And I think there are people out there that are trying to blame Rey Mysterio for a drop kick. And there's, you know, it's just an accident that happens. Fortunately, it doesn't happen, you know, very often, but when it does, it's not going to probably get a lot of coverage in the US, do you think? I mean, as far as the non-wrestling audience, like, this isn't something that's going to get coverage.
It's coming up already. I mean, my wife this morning said to me, Mexican wrestler dies in match with Rey Mysterio.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And so I think the Rey connection is really what's going to make it play in the U.S. a lot bigger, just because obviously he was a big name in the United States. And then for him to just go back to wrestling.
Yeah, he just goes back.
And have this happen.
Yeah.
Somebody else brought it up. This is Chris Candido's birthday. He would have been 43 today, I think. And so it's just another one of those guys that, you know, jumps in your head and you're like, oh, yeah, he died young too, didn't he? And all these other ones. So it's just that time of year where I think a lot of people's are just there's little things that remind them of wrestlers that we've lost. And so people have compared it to Misawa or Owen Hart, of just someone who dies in a moment. You know, it really seems like he might not have really even been able to make it to the hospital before he was really gone. Right. And years ago, you know, there was a wrestler in Mexico who did a dive on the outside, got cerebral hemorrhage and died. I think that was Oro. And so, you know, there have been things like that, but there was no video at the time. And so, like you say, the video aspect of it, I think, brings it all a lot closer and a lot faster. It makes people really want to dissect it a lot more.
Well, I'm never going to watch that video again. I know that much. But I do think this is going to get some play in the U.S., if only for the reason that pro wrestling is seen as an quote-unquote art form with absolutely no societal positive effects. In some way, it's seen as a gutter form of entertainment. And any time you can get a chance to trash pro wrestling in the mainstream to make yourself feel better, certain news organizations will do that. So and make society feel better because, hey, we can all trash pro wrestling fans because they're a bunch of, you know, toothless, brainless morons who watch a fake sport, you know? So I think it's going to get a little bit of play.
And I think
Vince McMahon will probably come out with some sort of statement going, well, they do something different. Ours are, you know, he'll do something to distance the WWE, especially given that this is WrestleMania week. I think that's the other thing, is you have those two things coming together now.
Well, and you have that big event that Rey Mysterio is doing next week in San Jose.
Oh,
trying
God,
to,
yeah.
You know, the big Q&A and all that. And so I just started thinking, like, do you think he's going to cancel that? Do you think he's just going to go through with it? I mean, it's one of those shows going to go on. It's going to be about his attitude, and I'm sure he's going to have a good time. But at that, you just have that. If it was today, for instance, it would seem really awful to have a party the day after a guy just died in the ring with you. When it's a week later, and, you know, if especially if any information comes out, depending on how Rey feels about it, it's not like I'm going to think one way or the other about what he decides to do. But it just was one of those where it's like, wow, what a bad start for this guy, for his Mexican career.
Right.
And it's just what awful circumstances are transpiring.
I have to think that he'll continue probably with that. If that party was happening today or even tomorrow, I don't think it would be happening at all. But I would imagine they still probably do it. The question and answer, that's probably the first thing that's addressed, is, you know, this situation. And, you know, I figure people going in will want to ask him about the WWE stuff. And I think most people in the U.S. will still want to ask him about that. But this is certainly a bad, you know, because I, in a way, woke up to this news. And it's never something that you want to wake up to, even if it's not a situation you follow. We're all pro wrestling fans, and a pro wrestler died in the ring, and that's never something that we want to wake up to. Let's move on from the sad aspect of pro wrestling to some happy aspects of pro wrestling, and that is the greatest service WWE has ever done, and that is the WWE Network. Monday, after WrestleMania, March 30th, at noon, our favorite person in the world, George Berrios, along with Vincent Kennedy McMahon, will be hosting a WWE conference call talking about the prospects of WWE Network, the level of subscribers on Mania Day, as well as the 2015 programming schedule, which is interesting because I seem to remember last year when they did this, Chris, and maybe I'm misremembering things. I seem to remember when they announced the schedule, nothing kind of went how they announced it originally.
Yeah, there's some elements of that. I think it's interesting because I had a guy email me a couple weeks ago, and he asked me, straight out, will they announce the WrestleMania number immediately following WrestleMania? And I said, I don't know. I wasn't expecting them to announce the million number, and then they hit me kind of blindsided with that, and the stock went through the roof. So then I was like, yeah, they probably will do something. But then they put out this press release, which I was happy to hear, A year ago, when they announced the 667-287 on April 7th, the stock fell quite a lot because at the time it had been in a big rise during March, building for the belief that domestic TV rights were going to be huge. And then it really collapsed starting in April, and then it collapsed even more in May. So the one thing that they've kind of learned is that they have to get ahead of this stuff, and they can't just, you know, trail behind and send out a press release and hope that's good enough. Now, when they, like you said, they announced the schedule the first time, you know, if you go back to that original presentation, a lot of the stuff that they said is there did happen. But some things, for instance, specifically the Daily Studio show, that never transpired. And then, of course, there was the one call where Berrios told us that Tough Enough was coming back, and then that got delayed and delayed, and then eventually USA was the one that paid for it, so it's not really coming to the network. And we definitely have seen them kind of do a little bit more cost-cutting. I think there's that huge looming question, which is, what is the WWE Network? What is the WWE Network's live stream? And is there honestly any content that they could begin putting on there that is going to convince a certain caliber of fan to either continue subscribing or begin subscribing just because that content is now available? Is it really about the archive episodes of Raw from the Attitude Era? Is anything short of basically, you know, same week programming of Raw and SmackDown going to make a big difference to this company? What do you guys think?
Jeff?
No. And I think WWE is so protective of its image and its brand that the archival stuff that they put up there will be mostly WWE-centric. I think there's a certain breed of fan who wants the other stuff that they have in their library put up there. Is this like a development slate? I haven't seen anything about any shows that they have in development of any kind. I mean, even before they did this last year, we had heard rumblings of Legends House, which is, God, nobody wants Legends House Season 2, I don't think.
Well, and that's really the key with this is that what they found was the most popular programming was live programming. The secondary most popular programming was essentially the brand new content, such as Main Event or things of that nature, where you could almost argue it's live programming. But essentially that very first run stuff. The next most popular was the reality stuff, was the kind of original series stuff they did. So Legends House or stuff like that. And the least popular was essentially the archival footage. Mm-hmm. And mixed in there is stuff like Slam City would probably be in that tier two, tier three type area, where they said that they were getting a lot of consumption of that on mobile devices and that people were really interested in that. And so that's more what they're moving in the direction of. So the one thing they kind of embraced was the idea that, well, we enjoy making brand new content that we seem to have the ability for people to reconsume a lot, and they like that a lot. But what they haven't really figured out anything is, what does that have to do with wrestling, and what does that bring to like a wrestling fan? What I'm really curious is, do we think that we are going to see the drop off like we have in the past, or is it going to be like last year? Because if you actually looked at the raw numbers from last year, they did manage every quarter to announce a number that was basically a little bit higher than the quarter before, which in a sense said we might have lost a whole bunch of people, but we were able to bring in a whole bunch of people too. And now with less commitment, with the same $90.99 price, everyone kind of gets it. OTT is going through the roof right now. All these new services starting. Is there the possibility that they've actually retrained their fans just to not give a crap and they're just going to hold on to the service for a long time? Or do we think that we are going to see a massive drop off like last year? I'll listen to what you guys have to say first, and then I'll see if I echo or disagree or agree.
I would think that we will see a fall off this year. I don't know how much the not having to sign up for a 6-month stretch will impact it, because people who wanted to quit the network were finding a way to quit the network anyway, even with that restriction. But now the fact that it's month to month, I can see a lot of people signing up for this month, and you may get some of them to check it out for a little bit longer. But I, you know, it could very easily be, you know, let's buy this show for $10 and then not pay anymore for this month. So I can definitely see a drop off. Even those who signed up maybe in December, like heading into the Royal Rumble season, like, okay, we're going to subscribe for these 3 months because these are the big 3 months of WWE. It's not like television has been captivating people, because longtime fans, and then you look at the ratings going into Raw this year compared to Raws of previous WrestleManias, it's not captivating an audience. And if you're not captivating an audience to watch Raw on USA Network, how are you going to captivate them to buy the WWE Network for $10 a month when there's a ton of other options out there and the WrestleMania season is over? You know, all the big stars are coming in. the big stars will be gone. Like, what is that incentive to keep watching, you know, an Extreme Rules or a pay-per-view, like a Money in the Bank pay-per-view, if everything you wanted was WrestleMania season and that's it? I'm sure there's other reasons too. I don't see how the numbers will go up from this. So you release that day after WrestleMania number, it might look really, really good. I anticipate it looking really, really good. But if they were releasing a number like 1 month later, it probably wouldn't look quite as good. Jeff, what do you think?
I'm still getting over this polling data, to be honest with you. I think there'll definitely be a drop off, but I don't understand how they can look at that and say, I mean, if you take this away from it being wrestling and you take a look at fans of any other kind of entertainment, be it a genre or be it a specific show, if you gave them 5 hours of free product on mainstream television, and then you're saying the network that you have is basically going to be a continuation of that with very little diversification of it, how you're actually going to maintain a fan base? Because people just don't watch wrestling. Wrestling fans don't just watch wrestling all the time, and their new programming or their new things are all in that kind of, for lack of a better term, fake world of wrestling, as opposed to actually peeking behind the curtain and getting to know any of these performers or anything. I just don't understand how you can have an original programming slate on the network when you have so much product out there before you even get to the network, and then say this is just going to be a continuation of that product.
And I think that brings up one thing I've kind of argued with some people about, which is essentially the network had the potential to be a network, but instead all I see it is an OTT delivery service for live pay-per-views. There is extra content that is also available that by subscribing you have access to, but for the most part this entire service lives and dies by their ability to produce a live pay-per-view that makes people want to tune in and watch it, and they're selling it to you for $10. We have a long history of knowing how WWE fans consume pay-per-views. We know what their behavior is throughout the year. We know what happens when they're really interested in it and how they'll buy everything known to man, even when it's really crappy. We know when they're not interested in it, they'll just, you know, a lot of people just don't pay attention. And that it's the live current product that drives a lot of the interest. Now, what can they add to the slate that's going to make a difference? I think if they said every month we're going to have the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast live, he's going to have, you know, a big name in here and we're going to do that. That's a decent thing to announce, because to Jeff's point, that kind of goes the idea of looking behind the curtain. You get a, you know, you felt like the interview with Triple H or that interview with Vince McMahon, you might have learned something that you weren't going to get on a complete a worked interview. You know, there was obviously elements where they're both trying to control their image. But, you know, we did get to talk a little bit about CM Punk. We did get that brass ring speech from Vince McMahon. We did get to hear a little about Triple H and his thoughts on NXT and those sort of things. So I like that. I don't know what they can turn on. I don't know what they can offer. And so it's this really interesting thing. The good news is they only have to announce basically quarterly numbers. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have a huge number for 331. They don't have to announce another number until 630. And that number is not even going to be announced until July. So essentially they buy themselves a lot of time with this announcement before they have to even really fight the fact that they're going to be losing a lot of people. And so ideally, yeah, if they can announce a slate of things that they're going to do, you know, there's still stuff you can throw on there. For instance, all those WWE films they have. Yeah, they're not great. But you know what? I would still love to have access to that entire library of films. Yeah. And one or two of them might interest me. And just like Jeff said, that's a non-wrestling piece of content that I might actually have interest in consuming when I myself, as a hardcore fan, find it hard to watch SmackDown every week, let alone main event, let alone superstars, let alone gazillion, you know, a wrap-up show with Renee Young or anything else. So I think there's opportunity there. The Daily Studio show I do think is going to happen at some point, and I think that's part of the best way for them to kind of start programming people to care about what's happening on the network at certain times. People have pointed out that things like Saturday Night Main Event and whatnot are starting to get aired during, you know, Saturday nights, which is a decent idea, things like that, which are really simple ideas. I always go back to the idea that was talked about on Goodwill Wrestling one time about, you know, I would love if there was like a liquid television version of professional wrestling where it was just short clips and promos and matches and everything just mixed together in kind of this frenetic, you know, psychedelic style. stuff like that that would be really fun and interesting that, you know, might make you want to just go and turn it in. Because for me, I don't have an interest in going back to watch certain pay-per-views unless there's a very specific match I want. I'm not the type of guy who just sits down and says, I'm going to watch a whole pay-per-view right now. So it's just really hard to get that time commitment from me. And the one thing they seem to be focusing a lot more on is the idea of creating short-form content, because they keep pushing more and more and more. We want to be consumed more by mobile users, and mobile users tend to be very much into the short-form content, so they have to figure out ways to deliver that. But, you know, people are already complaining about the fact that there's some cool stuff that's on the network that you have to basically go on the website, hit watch later, and then you can log on through your Hulu or through your Roku box or other places to actually watch it. So there's still issues with the compatibility of just the WWE Network and how it's launched at this point. But we're in this year where we're seeing TV ratings way down. We're seeing TV ratings across many shows way down. We're seeing a very low Raw rating going in for WrestleMania here, though historically that hasn't necessarily been the only guide to say whether it's going to work or not. But we're also seeing HBO about to launch their OTT service, where, of course, Netflix is very heavy in the game. And Amazon has really been picking it up more and more with their producing of new programming. So I'm really curious whether or not all these new people trying to use OTT, is that going to make everybody else want to get in the game? Or is that going to really fight for the consumer's dollar? And then the next thing you know, we're going to see a lot of people dropping the WWE Network because they'd rather spend that money on a different OTT service.
There are two things going to your points that I really like. I like the liquid television idea. I would love to see like a pop-up video type of show on the network where you get kind of some historical content, you get some behind the scenes things you didn't know, you know, in a half hour format of a very classic match or a classic show or something to that effect. I think that would go over really, really well on the network. The other thing, and this was a point that's been made by many, many people, I think you have to theme the nights somehow, so that you drive people who have different interests and different things about wrestling into it. I'm not saying different territories and stuff, but like say on NXT night, on Wednesday nights, it's all about young up-and-comers. So going into NXT, your live show there, you have, say, the first couple matches that you have on video of a Shawn Michaels or of a Triple H, maybe when he was Terra Ryzen in WCW, or shows like that, and they all feed into a specific kind of theme that you go, okay, this is going to be the night I watch the network as opposed to the night I watch actual network television of some kind.
I like the, I think the podcast is something they should definitely be making a regular thing, whether it's once a month. I've been going back and forth. Like the Stone Cold podcast is a good idea because obviously, you know, Steve Austin has his podcast and Steve Austin is a very popular guy. I don't know why they just don't make their own podcast out there, like hosted by someone in WWE, like that they can control, that they can own, that they can, you know, do whatever they want with and make it a TV show like that. It's an interesting idea because no matter what is said during the podcast by a Triple H or a Vince McMahon, people are glued into listening to it. They're intrigued by what these guys are going to say when it's not, you know, those characters on WWE Raw. But
And that was something Berrios talked about at, I think it was the conference down in Florida from a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked him, have you been approached by Sirius or XM or any of those guys to do a podcast? And they said, oh, yes, we've been approached. And we're just trying to make the financial thing make it right for us and whatnot. And I know at one time, I swear Michael Cole had something that he was doing, like some kind of show that he was going to be doing on there. And I don't know if that lasted or didn't last. And they, of course, had played in radio many, many years ago, you know, 20 some years ago. They used to have WWF radio as an actual radio thing. So they've done it in the past. I think it's going to be one of these where they want to make money off of it. So they're trying to get, you know, paid for it. And if it's like, you know, so many of their other projects, they'll put a lot of attention into it for the first 3 months. And then the next 3 months, a lot of people will forget about it. And then about a year and a half from now, it will slowly die and disappear. I mean, I was looking at the WWE Tout thing, and it was either January of this year or January of last year. They just kind of stopped posting on it. And it was just kind of funny to see how it just slowly disappeared over time. And so that seems to happen a lot with this company.
Yeah. Can I be the guy to say that that's a terrible idea to have a WWE-centric podcast? Just because for this reason, I think Stone Cold brings a certain level of credibility that he's not trying to snowball the audience. I mean, we've watched the WWE call-in shows that were on USA on Saturday mornings or whatnot. I forgot the name of it right now. I know Russo hosted one.
Livewire.
Livewire, things like that, that were basically extensions of pro wrestling. I think the podcast audience is savvy enough where they kind of don't want to be, for lack of a better term, worked. And when they're spending an hour listening to a show, they kind of, again, the peek behind the curtain type thing. And I don't think you're going to get that from a WWE micromanaged podcast. I think that, and yeah, Stone Cold doesn't have free reign on his stuff when he does the behind the scenes things. I'm sure the questions are pre-screened and whatnot like that. But Stone Cold also has the credibility with the audience where, you know, it's not going to be like Michael Cole in full shill mode.
I'm with you in the sense that I have no interest in said show, probably, if they're producing it. But I would say if they're going to put it on XM radio or something of that nature, there's some value to it just because I think there's so many people that want content and they just want to hear it live when they're driving around and doing it. I agree with you. It's not a good podcast download. It's really just more as a live thing, just the same way, you know, a lot of people listen to live sports talk radio, and I just can't believe they do it every day, but they're like, hey, I'm already in the truck. I have nothing better to do, so I just do that.
I completely disagree with the fact that it would not be one. I find it could be a very interesting download for a lot of reasons. I think it would become popular because the same reason why whenever, you know, a guy like Taz or Chris Jericho starts a podcast, it's popular because they want to hear these opinions. But it wouldn't be too far different from that format. You could easily have like a guy like Ryback or Dolph Ziggler for an hour long form conversation talking about their real life that you could then use as something for their character on television or just a way to put over the stars and get that familiar feeling from the fans to these guys. Like, okay, these are real people. I like Dolph Ziggler because I heard him on the WWE podcast and he told me about this story, and it becomes something where these guys seem, you know, closer to you than they are just on TV.
Hold on, do you have the faith in WWE that they'd actually do that, or would it be like an hour of Bray Wyatt talking about his life in the swamps in Louisiana? Well,
that's the difference here. It would have to be a certain – you have to have the Stone Cold podcast aspect. Just it doesn't have to be hosted by Steve Austin.
I think we can all agree, though, if Rusev's lawyer has to do a one-hour interview and keep the accent, we would all listen to that show.
Absolutely, I would. But you know what I mean? Like,
Are you kidding me?
Take out Steve Austin. So you have this podcast on the WWE Network, or you put a podcast out there on iTunes. Like, even forget being on Sirius Radio or AM or FM radio. You just have this podcast that can be used as an advertising tool for WWE Network for whatever pay-per-view you have running out. Because it doesn't cost a lot to do this. Any cost they have would be in advertising.
If George Berrios goes on the show, I will listen. I will call in. It will be fantastic, and we can play Berrios Bingo with granularity. It will be a very good time.
I mean, hold on, Jeff. This is why podcasts are out there. Podcasts are being used as an advertising tool. Most of them aren't, you know, money making themselves. They're to advertise something that you're selling, or to advertise, you know, for a lot of these guys like Steve Austin, you know, his conversations, and then he has the ads on his show. But, you know, most podcasts out there are to advertise something you're selling. So why not have a WWE podcast that you can control? Yes, the content would have to be strong, like a Steve Austin podcast, as far as the long form interviews. But you have a new guy, you know, you do 52 episodes of this podcast in a year. You have conversations with referees. You have conversations with the wrestlers. You have conversation theme episodes with some of the divas of NXT. And then you sell that event.
Yeah, there's guys that have to go to television every week who sit there and do very, very little. Right. And that there's guys on that writing staff who sit there and, you know, don't necessarily have the ability to contribute because there's way too many, you know, too many cooks.
Yeah.
And so I would love to see, you know, have X and Y get together and start doing that, because at the very least, you know, if it ends out there that you get Luke Harper to talk for an hour about a character idea or something like that, and then somebody latches on, then finally, you know, they've spent an hour thinking about it. And how many guys have complained about, you know, Justin Gabriel was just complaining about his crazy, where was it, the daredevil werewolf idea he had. And it's just like, you know what, maybe if that had been able to be fleshed out with someone from the creative team in a format like this podcast, maybe that would have been an opportunity for them to explore. So
you could have
I didn't mean bad idea. I just meant I myself and what I consume probably would not add it to my list because now I'm missing so much already.
Yeah. I don't think it's a bad idea in theory. I think it's going to be – it would be a bad idea in execution. It's kind of like watching it's kind of like watching the Four Horsemen documentary and watching Arn Anderson be in character the entire time while everybody else is doing real talk. And it would drive – I think it would drive away fans because it wouldn't get a point – what you guys are saying and what you guys are pitching is a great, great idea. I don't have the faith in WWE's micromanagement of their product and of their intellectual property and their characters to let them go on a show without being in full, for lack of a better term, Miz mode.
And not even that, too, but you're paying money to bring in Steve Austin once a month for these WWE Stone Cold podcast. You're bringing in Steve Austin, you're paying him, and then you're giving Steve Austin the content. You're letting his podcast go out there with your, you know, with Triple H or Vince McMahon, and he's getting the content out there and reaping all the rewards of it. Why not just cut out that portion of it? Own it yourself. Have Renee Young host the podcast. Have an interview with a different star, and then you own the content. You can put it on your network. You can release it with downloads. You can sell advertising for it. You can promote the WWE network with certain, you know, URL codes. I just don't see why they haven't done something like this yet, because it costs nothing to produce it, really.
Well, why not make the deal with Podcast One? Because then they'll plug it across the board with other Podcast One podcasts like they do, and bring Stone Cold in as an employee. It keeps them in the fold. It's a win-win.
Well, I think they actually do have a contract with Stone Cold today already.
Yeah.
He has a retainer kind of contract with them.
Right.
I do think WWE always struggles working with somebody else because they always believe they can do it better themselves.
And that's why I'm inclined to let them do it better themselves. And I'm, you know, advocating cutting Steve Austin out of it, because I don't think you need a Steve Austin to be the host. I think the actual characters, the person that you're interviewing on that show can be the reason why people would download it.
We'll see.
Just an idea.
No, I like it. I think Gagne can timestamp this as the end of the podcast conversation.
Yes.
But I was going to ask you two, if we were to say numbers, back to the WWE OTT numbers, guess for WrestleMania, you know, I've seen 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, way over 1.4 thrown out there. Just to give a little bit of context, last year, with a week to go before WrestleMania, they had 495,000 subscribers. Mm-hmm. The day of WrestleMania, they had 667,000. So they gained almost 170,000 people in a week. Mm-hmm. And that was last year, right when they were ramping up. So this year, we know that in January, they had 1 million. Wasn't necessarily 1 million paid, but let's assume once you flush everything out, they have at least 1 million people coming in the beginning of March with a free February. Where did they announce for this number for WrestleMania? Is it below 1.2? Is it above 1.5? Is it, you know, obviously right in the middle is an easy one to throw out. So get a little bit more specific. What do you guys think?
I would say that if they are close to 1.4 million subscribers, I wouldn't be surprised. We're a year later. It's more familiar with, you know, the buying public about what these over the top services are. And I can see them pulling in a strong number. The negative to that is I don't think this WrestleMania has hit nearly the resonating build as last year's did, especially to who would be the public buying this service. You had last year the big Daniel Bryan run, and of course he was promoting to the hardcores and the fans who really wanted to see Daniel Bryan, and those I think were the types of people who would go out and purchase the service. This year, I don't see, you know, a lot of kids buying WWE Network to see Roman Reigns beat Brock Lesnar. I just don't see that hook that you have to get a lot of late buys for the show via the over-the-top service. But 1.4 wouldn't surprise me. I'd make a prediction between 1.3 and 1.4, partly for the ramp-up that you talked about going into last year and the fact that this is a more familiar service now to the buying public. Jeff?
I'll lowball it and say 1.2.
Would that be considered a lowball, Chris, do you think? If it was 1.2, yes. Is that a lowball? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Originally in February, I gave out an estimate, and I went between 1.21 and 1.39, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've come down from that 1.39 for the reasons you mentioned. The low ratings, the fact that Roman Reigns' push has not really caught on really heavily. And I just don't, you know, I heard from some friends of mine who canceled after Royal Rumble. And, yeah. You know, I've been as critical as anyone of the whole canceled WWE Network trend. But when my hardcore friends themselves told me they stopped subscribing, I was kind of like, really? And they're like, yeah, I don't know whether I'll get WrestleMania or not. One of them was like, I'm already going to a friend's house, so I don't need it for the month. So, you know, to me, I'm thinking if they came in at 1.4, that would be amazing. Last year, they did have 1 million people buy between pay-per-view and OTT. But I do think that pay-per-view number is going to be shockingly high, because I do think that there's a segment that is just going to continue to buy this pay-per-view, even though they don't have to.
Right.
I do think 1.32 was as high as I was willing to go the other day. So I'm still hovering around that 1.29 to 1.32 range. So I've kind of narrowed it down to that at this moment, but I don't have any really good metrics. I did do a survey recently about the network. I haven't got the results from that survey yet. So hopefully with those numbers that I'll hopefully get this week here, I'll be able to really, you know, go to a little more granular on my results. But I don't know. I think it would be great if they would be thrilled if they could get 1.4, because what, to me, their goal for the year is to end the year with an average over 1 million. And that's hard to do, mm-hmm. because you're giving away a free month, February. You have this UK launch with these weird 21-day protection laws where you can cancel online, you can get your money back after 21 days and all this stuff. And you have this long stretch of time between April and December where WWE just doesn't know how to program very much that's going to be that compelling. Short of, like someone said, a reality series starring Brock Lesnar where he has to be roommates with somebody. That's about the only thing left that I think would get a huge, huge subscribership.
Let me ask something. Do you think that there's a significant number, and by significant, I don't mean that big. I mean maybe a couple hundred thousand, 300,000 people, 200, that would be willing to pay for WrestleMania or buy the network to see the return of The Undertaker. Do you think that's a drawing factor in this year's card at all?
Good question. If The Undertaker had been built up a little bit better, yes. If we had really played the whole, like, Undertaker's going to retire, no, he's not, he's coming back angle, I think that would have been worth something. The way he's been built up here, I don't think most people even realize as a casual fan whether The Undertaker's coming back or not, because, okay. You know, it's not been a mainstream thing. It's not been a big deal. Like, Undertaker comes back from streak with Brock Lesnar and is fighting Bray Wyatt. You know, that really hasn't been the headline that I've been noticing, at least personally.
And especially for the fact that you watch Raw, and a lot of the build has been Bray Wyatt promos backstage. They've been on the Tron. They go maybe 2 or 3 minutes and they're over. Like, even the Brock or the Bray Wyatt side of this, it's not like he's been on TV for 15 to 20 minutes at a time pushing this. They had the one in-ring angle with the lighting the chair on fire, and that's kind of it. If you blink or skip commercials, you may have missed the entire build for the Bray Wyatt Undertaker.
Do you think that's the closing image of this week's Raw?
No, I don't. They have to do Brock and Roman.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Sting stuff is interesting. I do think the Sting thing, if you're a casual fan and you're flipping through channels and you saw Sting standing there with Randy Orton, that might have got you excited and thinking, right. I'm really curious to see what Sting's up to. And I do think that he has some draw power with him. And, you know, the question also has been thrown out there, just change subjects, is what do you do with Sting in the future here? Do you use him again in a ring? And then do you use him as a singles or a tag? Because I could totally see a tag match with Sting, you know, Sting and Cena versus Triple H and somebody else or something of that nature in the future.
Well, Jeff and I talked about this on Shake Them Ropes this week, is I could easily see them doing, you have a strong Undertaker win with Bray Wyatt, you have Sting beating Triple H, and for the next year, and this ties into the WWE Network because you can promote the history of these two guys by watching the WWE Network, I could see the post-Mania Raw with a face-off between Sting and The Undertaker, and there's a match already for WrestleMania 32 in Dallas. Like, that's your promotion. You got these two guys winning strong at WrestleMania 31, and then there is your dream match for WrestleMania 32 when everyone was crying how we didn't get Sting and The Undertaker this year. We're going to get a year-long build for it at WrestleMania 32. I don't think you see Sting in a ring until WrestleMania 32.
Oh, I could see them totally blowing any goodwill and making Sting the commissioner of WWE post-WrestleMania, and how are the authority going to get one up on Sting? So, I mean, either way. I mean, they could go either way on this. That's the scary thing. I
feel let's not forget that they The Rock wrestled The Miz and R-Truth
right,
at Survivor Series.
You might see Sting, but like maybe I'm being way too optimistic on this entire show about everything. But I think that would be pretty cool.
I like the idea of being able to say for 1 hour or 2 hours a week for the next year, we're going to have the Sting Hour and the Undertaker Hour,
yes,
where we show you a show with a classic Sting match. We show you it's something with the classic Undertaker. And, mm-hmm. you know, God knows both of them have enough library content that is owned by this company that without the TNA run, there's still a ton of Sting stuff for them to go back to. And there's certainly enough Undertaker stuff.
Mookie, that's a fantastic idea. I'm putting you in charge of this network.
But I mean, a Monday night, maybe before or after Raw, you have an hour of the best of Undertaker versus Sting. And that's your build for this match. You don't need to have Undertaker and Sting on the show for a year, but you can use the WWE network to build it. God forbid you get subscribers to go watch the Best of Sting Undertaker because they know that's a match they're getting. And then, you know, you need a hook for WrestleMania 32 at AT&T Stadium in Dallas. And, you know, that's the dream match that everyone was asking for. It probably wouldn't be the main event of the show, but that's one hell of a semi-main as far as the aesthetics go. Sting and The Undertaker finally at WrestleMania. And the biggest part of it would be the synergy with WWE Network. There's so many ideas. So many ideas. What are we going to get from George Berrios? Probably a new season of WWE Countdown.
he'll start promising the Tuesday Night Wars because he promised the Monday Night Wars for a good 8 months there before we finally got it. And so he'll just keep moving on.
WWE Cribs.
Diva's House.
we'll finally get the Swedish version, international version of Superstars that have all those Ludwig Borga matches that weren't aired in the U.S. and the other good stuff.
I must say, like, Jeff joked about that, but I would watch Diva's House. count me in as a viewer.
We're going to get a lot more of clip shows where we hear The Miz giving fake opinions. That's what we're going to get.
The guy knows his role. The Miz is no Alex Riley. He knows where his bread is buttered. He's gearing up for the long haul in WWE, this guy.
So have you guys already given your prediction on who's winning the NXT Battle Royal spot?
Oh, interesting.
Oh, did you read about have you heard about that, Rob, or no?
No, I haven't.
At Access, they're doing a Battle Royal, and the winner of that Battle Royal gets entrance into the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
There's only one man it can be, honestly.
Who?
Sami Zayn. It could be Adrian Neville, but I think it'll be Sami Zayn.
I got news for you. I mean, this was the opinion I put out there, and I put it out as a joke, but you remember what they did with Rusev and the Royal Rumble, right?
I do.
They could do the same thing with Baron Corbin here.
I don't know, because I don't see him coming up to WWE TV in the next 6 months, and at least Rusev was coming up there. I also, just to finish the Sami Zayn point, and then Chris, we'll get your thought on this. Sami Zayn is selling the injury still on NXT TV, and it's still ongoing, so I guess it could be someone else other than Sami Zayn, but if I was to pick someone aside from him, I guess I would go Adrian Neville. I don't think it makes sense to put Owens up there yet. It doesn't make sense to put Finn Balor up there yet, but Chris, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you brought up the guy I was going to say, Alex Riley. I think you just throw a scrub up, and then that way he's not new to the TV, and so you can do whatever you want with him when he's up there, and you know, it's your last kind of hurrah with the guy.
Calling
so
Alex
he gets
Riley
in. He doesn't win, but, you know, just another guy. And same thing they did with Bo Dallas, because he won the qualifier to get in Royal Rumble back in, 2013? And they went nowhere with it. Because they flew in Harper and they flew in a bunch of other guys, and they all had like a one-night tournament to like decide who was going to go into the Royal Rumble.
That aspect would be interesting if you were rehabbing a couple guys from the main roster on NXT and you had a little bit of intrigue about that. I think that'd kind of be cool, but I still think they're going to feed someone to the wolves. That's way too early.
I don't know what you could do there. I guess it's interesting. I don't appreciate Alex Riley being referred to as a scrub on this show.
Enzo Amore. That's
I actually was going to thank Big Cass. Like, if you're going to have this big segment with the big guys like Mark Henry, Kane, and the Big Show, and you have Cass in the match, and he's like, who is this young kid who's bigger than all of us?
Well, that was my thinking with Baron Corbin as well. Yeah, continue.
Right, Baron Corbin would look like a shrimp compared to all these guys. Big Cass at least stands over Kane and at least stands tall with the Big Show. Baron Corbin would be dwarfed by those guys.
That's not a bad idea, to be honest with you.
So, speaking of NXT, somebody was very vociferous.
Look at us being able to say words on this program.
I'm very impressed. arguing with me about what is the viability of NXT as a touring brand, because they were saying, look at it, they just did 4,000 in San Jose, they're super hot down where they are there, and they're, you know, they're big in the Arnold Classic in Cincinnati, wherever it was. So it's this big opportunity there, and I was kind of giving the counter argument. It said ECW was a touring brand that tried, that WWE tried to tour by itself, and it was such a miserable failure. WWE basically tried to cleanse the books to not admit that it happened. If you go and look at the financial statements, they basically knock out all the ECW-only touring events after they closed the brand down, just so they wouldn't have to see it dilute their overall attendance numbers and things of that nature. And so the counter to me was, well, therefore, they should start doing just pay-per-view weekends, because that's the only time that WWE production staff is really not working. That Saturday night before a big show. And I thought, oh, that's an okay idea, because you already kind of have those access built in, and you might have fans. But I don't know. You guys follow NXT so much closer than I do. What do you think is the viability of this? Because it tries to tour in Florida, and it just draws a couple hundred people when it tours there.
Yeah, people talk about it being super hot in Florida because they grow from 200 fans to 400 fans. You know, percentage-wise, yeah, they're growing big time, but still. You know, they run monthly in the same buildings, so it's good that they're drawing more. But at the same time, it's 400 fans. That's not going to be viable as a touring brand nationally. I always thought the idea is if they did these national tours with the top talents of NXT, they would still do the Florida tours as the developmental tour for all the lesser guys down there, the guys who are still learning, the Chad Gables and the like.
Well, the argument given to me was, WWE house shows are meaningless. Unless you're a kid, you don't have a great draw for why you want to go to a house show, because you pretty much are just going to see a warm up for what they're going to do on television.
Right.
However, seeing NXT live would be really exciting for the fans that used to care about house shows, because it would be seeing these stars that, you know, have a chance to do a lot more.
But for how long? So that was is the question, because if say they tour and they're touring every weekend, eventually it just becomes, because they're already NXT. The NXT house shows aren't like anything meaningful is happening. They're good matches and everything like that, but it's not like anything meaningful is happening. For instance, on the Cleveland house show that they had, you know, that stuff isn't going to be on TV. The house show that's going to be in San Jose will be excellent for those, you know, you guys out there who are going to WrestleMania will get a chance to see these guys who you probably have never seen live, like never, ever seen a guy like Finn Balor live. And this is your chance. It's excellent. But if they tour long term, it's going to be like a John Cena house show or a Daniel Bryan house show eventually with lesser known stars. I don't know if the viability of is people that think they're going to start drawing as much as SmackDown TV shows. And, no. You know, those types of house shows.
No, it's not even close. I mean, exactly. WWE averaged 6,000 people a show in 2014. They averaged 5,000 people a house show. Right. So that 6,000 number is pay-per-views and TV tapings and whatnot, taking the average up. It's not even close. And so that's the other. And also the structure of how NXT guys have paid is totally different. Mm-hmm. Because when you go on the road with NXT, they basically for everything for you, because it's part of your developmental contract. When you become main roster, you're responsible for all your transportation and your hotel short of plane tickets. So it's not even the same kind of basis on what it is. And yeah, you could pay the guys less, but it doesn't matter. It's not the same thing overall. And also, it just kind of dilutes the whole idea of what is developmental's purpose. Now, on the flip side, if you change it to say developmental's purpose is to teach you how to work in front of a live crowd and react to different things, maybe a house show is a good way to really get them really doing. But that's what they do already. They take the guys and they put them in the dark matches before on house shows or before Raw and SmackDown and things like that to teach them a little bit. Is it enough? Of course not. If we had a real developmental territory that was, you know, segregated off and they could do what they needed to do, just like they had planned to do 10 years ago, that would have been great for the system. But now we're in a different world, different time, different plan.
Well, here's the thing. It wouldn't be developmental anymore. The developmental would be those who are still in Florida. If NXT is going to be a touring brand, there's a couple of different ways you can go about it. If they're going to be a touring brand where there are house shows every week, then those guys are going to be a la main roster guys as far as the NXT main roster, and the developmental guys will be touring house shows in Florida and working at the Performance Center. So it'll be like a different thing. Or you could do what Triple H is doing now, which is really smart, putting NXT house shows in places that will draw those hardcore fans that watch it on the network, aligned with other special events, you know, putting it in a New York City when a big event is going on, putting it in NXT San Jose. I don't see Triple H having an NXT house show in Des Moines, Iowa on a random March weekend. I just don't see that happening. Like, this is when we talk about them touring nationally, I see them doing what they're doing now and touring selective cities on selective dates that match up with something else that will draw an audience.
Well, exactly. Is this an indie with some corporate backing to it, or is it a place where we're trying to build up new guys for our system? Because the moment this becomes anything other than, I mean, the moment you take those indie darlings off the roster and move them up is the moment that an NXT touring brand dies, because you don't have enough to cover for, you know, your Bull Dempsey versus Baron Corbin matches and whatnot. I mean, if you bring the Divas up, that takes away something away from what makes NXT right now. Right now, I think NXT is special in a vacuum, in that it's everything has kind of come together to make this a well-rounded show, in terms of you have all these top guys from various small indies, you have a very strong women's division, and you have quite a few new acts that have a lot of up-and-coming promise. The moment you start poaching them for the new roster, or for the main roster, and you start watering down the NXT brand, and you start getting headline shows with the Lucha Dragons versus the Vaudevillains,
well,
it's a moment that's going to die.
Let me stop you right there, because this notion that they would, in the next 3 years, call up all of these guys to WWE TV, when we only see about four called up a year anyway, and they're signing all these new guys from ROH, the Briscoes, Samoa Joe, you're going to have other names being signed as well. And there's talents that haven't even debuted on NXT TV yet that are going to draw a similar audience, and you can put them over in a similar way. I don't think this notion that all these guys would make the main roster and NXT would be devalued is a reasonable expectation, because I don't see all of them coming up. And we've talked about on this show before how some of these guys are being signed with the intent to be in NXT, not the intent to be in developmental eventually to go to WWE. These guys are being signed for the intent to stay in NXT and be there until, of course, things change. But that's the intent going in.
Well, I understand that. But even as it is now, NXT isn't hitting it out of the park week after week for an hour television program
on TV. That's right.
Yeah, but I mean, your house shows are going to sometimes reflect that.
I don't know. I think the house shows are more of the fact that they want to see these guys wrestle, and it could be, you know, not even relating to TV in some ways.
Okay. Well, I mean, and that's the second part of my point. I think the places you send NXT are the places these guys were already big. Your Philadelphia's, your Chicago / Ohio's, where there was a strong ROH presence. Austin, Texas would probably be a great NXT town, to be honest with you.
It'd be an interesting one for sure. Chris, what do you...
The Burbank Moose Lodge to compete against PWG.
Right, so. Yeah. Chris, you're going to the NXT house show in San Jose, are you not?
If my ticket is real, I don't know. What I was sent over looked very suspicious.
I sent you the ticket. It better be real.
Looked like you scanned it, faxed it to yourself using an AOL computer, and then got CompuServe to give you a digital dot matrix output. But yeah,
are you kidding me? Because I actually PDF'd it, and then I thought it looked. I mean, I have them printed out. I'll bring.
No, it's fine. It's fine. But no, yeah, I'm looking forward to going to the show. I am really far behind on NXT. All I know is that there's blue pants, but there's no longer green pants, black pants, or yellow pants yet. So I'm kind of hoping maybe for some expansions there. But I'm excited about the show. I really think it'll be really interesting. I'm so happy that it's just down the street from where Foley's doing his set. You know, when all things were announced, I think I was most excited about going to Mick Foley's show. Mm-hmm. And then I got the tickets to that. And then since then, Jim Ross's show has been announced. The NXT show has been announced. You know, things have changed with WrestleMania card. And so I have to say, I think I'm least excited about the Foley show now. And I'm most excited about WrestleMania and NXT and the Jim Ross thing. So it's just been really funny how priorities change. So I have a lot of catching up to do. I'm really out of it when it comes to NXT, short of just reading what's been going on. So I'm looking forward to sitting and standing next to Jeff and having him explain to me who all these people are.
You gotta catch up on the hottest feud in WWE today.
Don't.
Which is?
Alex Riley and Kevin Owens.
Oh my God.
It's the hottest thing going.
Yeah. What? Yeah. I'll see if I can find some Briley Pierce on the network and watch that instead.
Briley Pierce wasn't bad. You know, my favorite Briley Pierce moment.
I do not.
Is Dean Ambrose's debut promo. Where Briley just stands there as Dean's going wacky, and Briley's like, "Who is this guy?" That's my favorite Briley Pierce moment.
That was such a loaded question. You want to know my favorite Briley Pierce moment?
The fact that I have one may say something about me.
Oh, that's yes.
That's like asking for your favorite Antonio Pulaski moment, or whatever Roadkill was known during his very brief stint.
That's true. Yeah.
Anyways,
he was there. That's forgettable. The fact that he was there.
Oh, I did a great article one time for What Culture about just guys that came to WWE that you would not have actually realized. Like Johnny Swinger had his whole run.
Yep.
As under his father's name. God, what was it? Because he pretty much did heat matches the whole time. But Johnny Swinger had a long run in WWE where he just did nothing at all.
Johnny Pulaski, wasn't it?
I think it was, because his father was a tag team champ back in like the WWF. Yeah. And that was the connection there. And there's just lots of bizarre, you know, guys that have been through the system over the years that you just kind of like, wow, I really did forget that Tony Mamaluke did get hired back by WWE for a short, for a couple of weeks there and that sort of thing.
Johnny Parisi.
There it is. Yes, that was it. Cause Tony Parisi was his dad.
Yep.
And, or at least was the name that he was taking. I think it was his father, but maybe it could be like a Zabisco thing where it's just, you know, they make up a name and throw it on there. Mm-hmm. The Fujinami announcement for Hall of Fame. Maybe you guys have covered this already, but pretty surprising choice, don't you think?
Oh, God, yes. I would think they'd put in Tenryu before they put in Fujinami, because at least Tenryu has some WWE tape they could go to.
Yeah, I mean, I for my own entertainment.
And WCW, for that matter.
I mean, yeah, people can check out indeedwrestling.blogspot.com, where I did all these Fujinami facts. Just because I was going through trying to find, like, who did he wrestle that maybe, you know, would be a connection to his, besides Ric Flair. I was trying to find, like, was there, you know, when the WWF junior heavyweight days, was there anybody? I was like, well, Johnny Rods technically is alive, and he did defend the title once against Johnny Rods, and went through, but it was amazing. I mean, Fujinami started in 71, has been wrestling ever since. And he wrestled all the Poffos. He wrestled Lanny, Randy, and the father, Angelo, in a match one time. He wrestled both Davey Boy Sr. and Davey Boy Jr. He wrestled four Guerreros, Mondo, Hector, Chavo, and Eddie as Black Tiger, and just all these other ones. And so it was really fascinating when I was just going through all the people he wrestled and how many matches he had. But it's just such a strange thing. And then, of course, it's the question of, like, I don't think I've heard him speak English. I don't know if you guys have. So is he going to go through a translator? Is he just going to, you know, they keep the speeches so short these days anyways for half these guys, unless you're named Lita, that it's just, you know, whatever. So
he's going to be the new host of the podcast.
What do you think, Fujinami? Just once every hour.
Don't appreciate this, like, mocking that. My podcast idea, but whatever. No, that's fine. I mean, do what you want. I feel bad for this segment because this is going to be for the live audience there. Like, they'll be polite, I believe, during this, but I don't think it has that much interest. I think people are waiting for this segment to end.
I'll take it more than giving him a 5-minute clock like they did the Funks and Abdullah.
They're going to have to keep him short. Yeah.
But I just thought it was really interesting. I think that's kind of cool because, hey, maybe I can buy a Fujinami t-shirt while I'm at WrestleMania this year. I'm sure it's just the one t-shirt with everybody on it. But if they had any Fujinami specific thing, I just think that would be so cool. And I do think it's part of the ploy. You know, it's funny how they did it. When they inducted Inoki, do you remember what they did for WrestleMania that year?
Not specifically in context here, no.
Oh, they had Yoshitatsu win the Dark Battle Royale.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yes. So that was the one because they had all the press there already. I think it was one of you actually was telling me about how they had all the baseball press there too because the Japanese star was in town. Who was that?
Hideki Matsui was there.
And so the press was all there, so they wanted to like really pile it on because Hideki was excited to see Antonio Inoki, and then they had Yatsu win, and then they had a backstage thing with the two of them and whatnot. And so this could just be a ploy for the
Hideo Nomo? Hideo Itami?
Hideo Itami's winning that NXT Battle Royal, and he's going on to win the Andre the Giant one.
If he finally gives the go to sleep to like Kane in the Andre Battle Royal, that'd be the greatest moment of all time.
Oh God, I'd regret not going to WrestleMania.
That would be my favorite Briley Pierce moment.
But I just thought that was interesting. And so it could just be a play for the Japanese audience that now they're just going to try to get a international star every year of somewhere that they can get. And they haven't actually launched the WWE Network in Japan yet. So I'm sure this is also part of their plan. As they keep saying, that's one of the countries that they've listed, along with China and India and some other places where I absolutely do not for the life of me think that they're going to be able to launch the network anytime soon. But just interesting things to me, little tidbits. I'm not going to the Hall of Fame myself, so I guess I won't even see Fujinami except for when he stands on the stage 500 feet away from me.
So what event are you going to? Are you going to something during that or just taking like a Saturday night and kind of being – because it'll be, what, 4 o'clock on Saturday out there?
Yeah, I don't even know. Like, I think it's just I'm going with my wife, and so I didn't want to get her too tired out. So we're pretty easygoing when it comes to just like go out there. I have this enormous stack of books that I've had since Christmas and my birthday that I have yet to read. Everything from Jim Henson to the history of Doug Hennig to the Encyclopedia of Murders and things like that. I have so many things to read that I'll just probably spend a lot of time reading and then spending time with friends that live out there and hanging out. And I've spent a lot of time in San Francisco before, but I've never really been in San Jose. And so the only thing I am really hoping to do is at some point actually meet Dave Meltzer because I've never actually met Dave. So it would be kind of fun just to say hi to him one way or the other. Did you meet Dave when he was at the PWG show?
No, I didn't. I didn't get to meet any of them. I met Dave at the Vegas conventions a couple times.
Yeah.
And Rob, have you met Dave, your employer?
I have met Dave. I met him at the Vegas convention this year. Was the first time. I almost met him when I was out in San Jose for a work trip because I was working for a company that's based in San Jose. When I was or Cupertino to be exact. When I went out there, I emailed him. And I said, hey, I'm not going to have the West Coast feed of or the East Coast feed of Raw. I'm not going to be able to write a report. I'm here in San Jose, so I don't have the show in my hotel. And he responds, well, do you just want to come over and watch it? And that was probably one of the more intimidating emails I've ever gotten.
And did you say yes?
No,
Ray,
when someone
asks if you're a god, you say yes.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do that. First of all, I don't know. I mean, I never met the guy before, and I'm sure it would have been fine. I go over, watch Raw. I go over, watch Raw. Like he would have been, you know, probably we would have gotten in some type of pro wrestling conversation. I wouldn't have actually watched Raw, I'm sure, because we've just been talking pro wrestling for a little while. But no, I was a little intimidated and I was there for a work trip. So I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to be unavailable for 3 hours in case, you know, I had to do something work related. But yeah, it was one of those things where like I could have been watching Raw inside DeMeltz's house.
Hey, Rob, you want to come to my basement and watch this 5-star All Japan women's match from 1995?
Yes, please.
Now you have to go out to the shed and start moving around from the famous video. But Dave often will refer to like, oh, I had these people over for the pay-per-view, or I had these guys watching the show with me. And it just kind of strikes me because I was like, when I was in high school, I had Raw and SmackDown parties all the time with a bunch of dudes. And so the 7 or 8 of us would get together. We'd watch. We'd play Raw Deal. We'd go to friendlies afterwards.
Yeah.
And this became quite a thing all through college, in fact. But as I've gotten older, I spend less and less time watching wrestling with groups of other people it's live. So I think it's funny that Dave, at his age, appears to still have Kurt Brown and some other guys coming over to the house every week.
Oh, yeah.
He's making them up. They're all imaginary people. Except maybe Gilbert.
Yeah, or refers to his other family members as people that have visited him because he sees them so little that it's the only time they know where he's going to be for a while.
But I do mine like Alvarez. I hide it from people as long as I can.
Yeah, I haven't watched people. I think the only time I ever watched with groups of people was like WCW pay-per-views back in the day.
Because no one wanted to buy it by themselves.
No one wanted to buy it by yourself, and you kind of had to have a party to be interested in it for the 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like, I would buy WWF pay-per-views, and I would be transfixed on the pay-per-view. But, like, the WCW pay-per-view, you're watching it for 3 hours, not caring until usually the main event was kind of like a big deal for them on their show. So, like, you were waiting for the main event, and that was why you had the party.
What's your memory of maybe a pay-per-view that you spent your own money on and then you watched it, and at the end you're just like, this was the worst one I've ever seen. I regret watching this. I mean, you never bought like Heroes of Wrestling or anything, did you?
No, never have done a Heroes of Wrestling. I don't know what pay-per-view. I mean, I got the Survivor Series, the one where The Rock and Shane turned on Mankind. Like,
yes.
I think 98, maybe the 98 Survivor Series, maybe 99 Survivor Series. And I remember looking at the end of that show, like Dwayne Gilbert was in the Survivor Series. Like, it was a tournament and, you know, Mankind gets screwed in the final. And
yeah,
so
it was
on,
in
so
the
on.
Deadly Games one or something. Yeah, I think so, it was. And then, they did a mock out of the, cause Foley put himself in the, mandible claw or something to knock himself out, so he wouldn't tap out to the ankle lock. Was that the one?
Maybe I'm going to look up the Survivor Series, but I remember watching, it was my first WWF pay-per-view ever being purchased. And I just remember kind of being a little disappointed, but yeah, it was the Deadly Games, where The Rock and Mankind was the main event. I mean, look, there were 18 matches on this show.
Yes. Yes. I know that one just from when I do my refreshes of my data set.
Yeah.
One of the things I do is when you get the cage match ones, it puts all matches together in one line. Mm-hmm. So then I have to break it out. And so then I always have a count function where I say, how many matches are there? And if you go back to like the superstar tapings from the early 90s, you get up to like 24 or 28 matches. But the longest one I can think of is probably Survivor Series with the 18 matches there.
Yeah, 18 matches on the show. I remember being disappointed after that because it was all just a blur, and then you had the screw job at the end, and it was like, oh, well, I could have saw that coming. But, like, you had, you know, superstars like The Rock and The Undertaker and Mankind and Steve Austin in this tournament. And to get all the geeks out, you had X-Pac versus Steven Regal go to a double countout just to get some of these guys out of here. Like, I remember that pay-per-view being a little disappointed. And I didn't buy another WWF pay-per-view for a long time because of that, because, you know, I could have the parties with the WCW pay-per-views and it was enjoyable. And then the one WWF pay-per-view I got was disappointing. And I'm like, that kind of soured me for a long time, to the point where the next pay-per-view I actually bought, I believe, was WrestleMania 17 in 2001. So it was a while.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We always talk about the time we got together and we did the 12-hour pre-show for WrestleMania 2000. Where they had like, and then we played No Mercy. We had a huge No Mercy tournament in the other room. And I don't think we've ever left a room hating each other more than when we spent like 12 hours together just watching wrestling. We all hated wrestling so much by the end. And that, again, yes. I was such a big Foley fan at the time. And, you know, the big angle, he'd been done, he came back, and then he does that awful, the Foley elbow up where he thinks he's going to jump across, and instead he just lands on the announce table and crumples into a heap. And it was just like he was out of shape, and it was bad, and oh, God, that was a really, really kind of low point for just – it wasn't a low point in general, but just it felt so weak at the time. No, but I was going to say the worst pay-per-view I can – think of is I just remember one of those Dying Day WCW pay-per-views. And I just have that vivid image of like Sting and Vampiro battling on top of the giant screen, and then one of them getting set on fire and thrown off, because this was in the era of Shane McMahon doing stupid stunts and Chris Kanyon doing stupid stunts and all that. And just like, oh God, this is just such a terrible pay-per-view.
Oh, good old WCW. For Jeff?
Oh, mine's fairly easy. Slamboree 93. Because they had been promoting, because I'm an old school NWA WCW guy, they had been promoting the reunion of the Horsemen for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I bought this pay-per-view, and it was a bunch of matches with old guys that, not that the old guys sucked, but the matches sucked mostly, except for towards the end. But in the middle of it was.
Are you telling me Sting versus the Prisoner did not captivate you?
No, it didn't. But I just remember, okay, here comes the big thing I've been waiting for. I've been waiting for this thing since 89 when Arn came back to the NWA to fight J-Tex. Tully's coming back to the Horsemen. This is going to be awesome. And they come back. Tully's not there. And they make this that convoluted statement, oh, Barry must have gotten to him because Arn Anderson and Barry Windham were going to have a match later. And they introduce the newest Horseman,
Paul Roma.
And I paid money for this shit, and despite the great Hollywood Blonde Steamboat and Douglas match, my rage for the next hour and a half could not be contained, to the point where I'm just screaming at people whenever they try and talk to me. It's not even, this is my family I'm talking about, because I didn't have a group at this point, because everybody had basically laughs. But I'm like, I sat through a damn Ivan Koloff and Baron Von Raschke versus Thunderbolt Patterson and Brad Armstrong match to get to my effing Horseman reunion, and I didn't get my effing Horseman reunion that they had been plugging for a good 4 weeks on television. And I want a refund, but I don't know how to get one, and I don't know how to explain it to anyone if I could.
See, the next year Slamboree has one of my favorite gems of all time.
I love the next
the Terry Funk versus Wyndham match, which is just Blanchard match, just like at one point Terry tries to tear up the steps and like get a wooden board out just to hurt people with. Yep. And it was so insane and great and fantastic. And so I always think people are talking about that show. And then I went back and looked there and I was like, oh no, they're talking about the 93 one where Dory Funk fought, I think, Kaninsky or something in a not fun time. But
no, he listen fought, to the he, list no, of no, legends. It was Funk and Bachwinkle.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Kaninsky was with Dory Funk.
Kaninsky was with Dory Funk, I think. Yeah, no, that next year's one's great. The other underappreciated match on that one is Zbyszko versus Regal, which is just a stall fest, but it's great.
I got on a Regal kick a couple weeks ago, and so I was watching good Regal stuff and people were recommending it. And I watched that Steamboat Regal. And my God. They do some stuff in there where you watch it and you're like, I don't think 90% of today's roster could even do half of the moves that either Regal or Steamboat are doing here. Just kicking him out randomly in a match. Just these fantastic roll-ups and just, you know, suplexes and whatnot. It was just so entertaining. And I couldn't believe it was one of those things where you're like, wow, wrestling has fallen in terms of what they did. It's just so much more fun.
Yeah, I wish Sid was still around.
what is your favorite Sid moment?
Oh, my favorite Sid moment, easily the night of the reboot of WCW Nitro, where you have Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo vacate all the championships, and Sid is the WCW world champion on this night. So the Millionaires Club, all the rich guys, come out on the stage and Bischoff and Vince Russo are taking the belts out of everyone from all the guys in the ring, and the last belt that Bischoff has to collect is Sid Vicious's WCW world title. And Sid Vicious cuts a promo. If you want this belt, Eric, come down here and take it. And Eric Bischoff, no selling master, smiles and says, okay. And he goes up there and takes it. From Sid Vicious, one of the top babyface badasses in WCW, Eric Bischoff makes him cower and hand over the belt like a bitch. And that was my favorite moment.
Sid's actually responsible for the other pay-per-view I regret buying, and that was Starrcade 89 Future Shock, which was the tournament. And it turned out that Sid got injured pre-tournament, so the Skyscrapers were out of the tag team division, so they replaced them with the Samoan SWAT team, I believe. So I didn't get my Doom versus Skyscrapers match, and then they just killed Doom, and that's the same night they let Muda lose like 3 matches, and they killed Muda. I just went, this thing sucks, man.
And just to connect it all, there is a February 22nd, 1989 Fujinami versus Sid Vicious TV match from New Japan, where he was Vicious Warrior at the time. And they actually had some tag matches, too, if I'm not mistaken. I was just thinking of through all the names that I'd gone through for that he had wrestled. And yeah, there's a Choshu and Fujinami versus the Avalanche and Vicious Warrior tag match. Ron Starr got added in on a 6-man a couple times. One time, the Caribbean Express, which was Dan Castillo and Jose Perez. And yeah, pretty much those variations of which. But I think you should watch some Fujinami Sid Vicious and really get your fix in there, Rob.
I can't believe you have that match and Fujinami's the one going into the WWE Hall of Fame. Hashtag justice for Sid.
Yeah,
we'll put Sid's leg in the Hall of Fame.
Sid should be like the I think the main event of the WrestleMania 32 Hall of Fame class. Like I think that should happen. Why not? He should be in the Hall of Fame. Am I wrong? Let's see the names who are in there. Sid Vicious, Psycho Sid should be in the Hall of Fame.
Not the man who controls the world,
master and the ruler of the world. Who once beat Keith Slater on Raw?
Hold on, Sid Justice, I think, would be the one.
Chris, let me ask you this, and we don't have to spend a whole lot of time onto it, but it was announced this week that WWE and DraftKings announced a partnership. A lot of people, a lot of people at first, when they heard this announcement, probably thought, okay, DraftKings is going to do like WWE bidding and WWE fantasy. But really, it turned out it was just an advertising partnership in a way. You want to make mention of this, and what are your ideas about this partnership?
Well, I got so excited when I saw it because it said DraftKings is announcing a partnership with WWE. We're going to do a trip to SummerSlam. I thought, oh, that's really cool. And then they're like, no fee entry. You can join our draft contest. So I was like, cool. Yeah. So I did it, and it was for basketball. Yeah. And maybe it was written in there that it was for basketball, but I saw that nowhere. And if you told me WWE is going to be working on a contest with a fantasy sports thing, it just made sense to me to be like, oh, they're going to do fantasy sports. Uh-huh. Years and years and years ago, WWE did do a fantasy WWE league. They did many seasons of it, and I really enjoyed it. They had a salary cap, and basically they gave different guys different values. So if you wanted Triple H, great, but he was $10 million of your $20 million you had to spend. So you could take a bunch of scrubs, you could take your Alex Rileys of the world and whatnot, or your show, you know, your Funakis and
your
put them
Sids.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was really fun. And so they had different points for different things. Unfortunately, Sandman ruined everything, as he is apt to do, because they were giving out points for weapon shots. And one week, Sandman hit somebody with a cane like 37 times. And so he completely ruined the entire system. But I remember they did a couple seasons, and I think actually after a couple seasons, they even made it you had to spend like $10 to even get in. And I did it. I remember doing it, and I had a great time with it. And I've been a proponent to say that I think that there's something there for the idea of a fantasy wrestling league, be it a fantasy sports league or be it, you know, better wrestling simulators, but even getting out of the wrestling simulator thing, just a fantasy sports league. I think there's an appeal there because really analytical people like me have proven that if it works in baseball and it works in basketball and it works in all these other sports, March Madness, of course, that there's an interest for this sort of thing. There's a demand. And I was just like, wow, WWE really swung on a miss on this one. Cause in the end, it just made me angrier at DraftKings instead of like liking them at all. So I was just really shocked by this, and it's such a simple thing. You know, I don't even think the announcement of the partnership showed up on the corporate website. That should have been a big red flag. Anytime that it doesn't show up on the corporate website, that usually just means it's – oh, no, it is. It is
it's
there.
It's up there,
okay.
Now, yep.
Yeah, so what do I know? But it's just one of those where I was just like, we're still waiting on that tap-out endorsement, and I'm really curious whether that is going to ever materialize. I do think that with the whole Brock Lesnar situation, if Brock Lesnar stays, it makes a lot of sense for Tap Out to throw its hat in the ring with WWE. If Brock Lesnar doesn't, it doesn't hurt the ability to do it. But obviously, I think having Brock Lesnar as a face of your Tap Out brand helps a lot. And if Brock's in UFC, you can't do that. So if Brock's in WWE, at least that's an option. But was a big deal, and it kind of just fell through, and no one's talked about it.
I thought the same thing. I thought there was going to be like a fantasy wrestling league with the same kind of what you pointed out. The same, you had a salary cap, you could draft a team, and you'd get points based on, you know, say 5 months worth of WWE, or maybe just individual pay per views, or what have you. You know, and with the success of their mobile games, like the card game that they have and whatnot, I thought that was going to be a perfect kind of a synergy.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it seemed like such a simple thing, and maybe it's just that they don't want to be associated with betting in any way, that, you know, there already is that weirdness that goes on with the betting odds, and as a friendly thing, they don't want to be seen as part of that, and they don't want to get into, DraftKings doesn't want to get into that weird situation of, like, how can you have predetermined events as part of your gambling there? But I was just like, as a simulator, what an easy way to... you know, we've even talked about it before, about you do a, what is it, around the horn type thing, or a 538 type thing with wrestling on the network as you break down the numbers, like pop-up video or anything else. It would be fun to watch. And so it's, you know, Tully gives a suplex, and then a little pop-up bubble says Tully has suplexed people over 6,000 times, you know, whatever it is, just fun stuff. Or you could have a by-the-numbers type show. And again, it would be cheap. It'd be interesting. No one would watch it. So what good is it?
This may be a surprise to the WWE, but yes, children, young boys do play fantasy baseball. It's not gambling. They play fantasy sports because these are the people they idolize. That's how they get more into the sport.
Exactly. And I also, it's just fun just to do these sort of things. I think it really, for me, especially as someone who doesn't have a lot of time to watch wrestling, but I read a lot, and so I do pay attention to what's going on. And I am, like, I'm checking out my March Madness bracket because someone said I would get extra points if any of the high seeds made it to the round of 16. So I put a Harvard-Wofford game in there, hoping that was going to happen, and it did not.
A couple
of my high seeds are going through. But I'll tell you this, I'm actually checking the results on that thing. And I wouldn't know a thing about March Madness if it wasn't for the fact that I had entered this bracket. And I think these sort of things are informal ways to get people to care about what's happening in your product and to care about and pay attention to it. And so if you want something that's going to hook people and keep them there for longer, the more times you can engage them to log onto a website and to read about your characters or do anything else, that's going to help. Absolutely. Plus, it gives you an informal way of, even just like the network is, they supposedly are collecting all this information about people's habits and people's interests. Mm-hmm. And it's time to see a little bit of this in action, because, you know, the same thing, if every single person drafts Eric Rowan and they think that there's something there, maybe there is something there, you know, like, it gives you this great way to quickly data source what people are out there interested in a certain way, if you play with the stats on certain things. But what are you gonna do?
Final question, I think. And we'll ask both of you this, and we'll get my thoughts. And I asked this because it came up on the Voices of Wrestling podcast this week, and we were talking a little bit about WrestleMania 32 here on this show.
Nachos,
what? Yes. If you could, you have to fill up AT&T Stadium as best as you can next year. If you could pick any main event featuring guys who have been in WWE since the start of 2014... and we'll throw in, you can choose The Rock and Steve Austin possibly as well. You have those two guys and anyone on the roster in the last year and a half. What would you do as a WrestleMania 32 main event to try and get your biggest drawing card possible?
Well, as all good booking should be, I've had all of 25 seconds to think about this.
Yes.
So
which
this
is,
should be held.
Which is perfect. That's all you need.
Yeah. A must retire, like kind of like a cage of death match or tower, like they do in Mexico, where the last guy out of the cage, you know, gets stuck with something. But it's a retirement match, and you throw Kane and you throw Undertaker and you throw a bunch of guys that, you know, are all on the last legs of their career. Big Show, Mark Henry. And you just throw four or five guys that are really, you know, past 40 that are at the end of their career, throw them all in there and say the loser has to retire. And you do some big angle with that. That's my 5 cents.
That's your main event.
No, I don't know. Barbed wire, electrified, double cage, hell, swimming pool, island death match.
So Mookie Ghana just advocated a cage of death match as the main event.
Kane has to retire. Kane has to retire is the big pull of this thing.
Of WrestleMania 32. Hashtag WWE. Hashtag insane. Hashtag UCLA Sweet 16. Hashtag
Harvard versus Wolford.
Harvard v. Wolford. Perfect. That all fits 160 characters and sent. Yeah, so Cage of Death is your main event. That's great with Kane and all those guys and Baron Corbin. Jeff, what would your main event be?
I have to fill up the stadium with just the main event.
You want the best possible main event of WrestleMania 32. What would you do?
I want the best main event, or I want the most or the one that's going to interest more people.
Answer the damn question, please.
I'm stalling because I'm thinking, you son of a bitch.
All right, the correct
I like Rock Brock. I think there's
Rock and Rock is a good one. I think if you have Brock and Rock along with Sting and the Undertaker, along with the obvious main event of Steve Austin versus CM Punk, you just filled up the place.
I was looking at that. I was looking at you could even do Punk Brock, I think, with Paul Heyman hyping it.
Nope, that's a no buys. You have
How about Rock Austin? One last time.
I think having it as a fourth time, I think you did that with the Mania in Seattle. I don't think it would work again. Like, if you wanted the most popular main event to fill up fans and also get subscribers, by the way.
Cena Austin?
Austin and CM Punk? Cena Austin would probably be choice number two, I think, yeah.
Cena Austin, yeah.
Yeah, and though I like the idea of Punk because then I win a bet. So let's push for that idea.
Yes, you do. Well, I mean, all of the things would have to align, but I think that would be the show where everything could align. You promise CM Punk the main event. He comes back to do it. You promise Steve Austin and CM Punk, you know, this big, huge gate, obviously. I think that would be the one show because I don't see CM Punk fighting a second time. I think it's one and done for him. And, you know, that would be your welcome back to WWE for one show. And WWE might just be desperate enough to do it because they have to fill up this place and get subscribers. And you'll give CM Punk this one match because you need it.
I think they desperately need that Texas draw to be probably Austin, unless you can think of something bigger. You know, a Ronda Rousey type thing, if you could ever get it, would be obviously worth a lot. But, you know, I can't imagine it. But
Rousey
and
Charlotte, Mania 32.
I would have said Steph.
Well, yeah, Steph, I guess, would be there too. I have hopes that Charlotte might be something a year from now.
Well, this green pants you speak of, could she?
No. I don't even know who we're speaking of.
Blue pants.
We're speaking of blue pants, yes.
Leva Bates.
Leva Bates, no, she can't do it. She can't
do
it at all.
You have a vacated title and you have Cena versus Flair. And Cena going for the 16th time, but if he doesn't get it, he has to retire.
The Ascension.
Like in a cage of death?
Sure.
In a cage of death. The Ascension versus the Von Erich boys.
With Hayabusa in there, too. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Adam Rose versus Leo Kruger in a mirror match where Festus plays fake Leo Kruger. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities. I thought that was interesting because I wanted to see. I think everyone would realistically say if you can get Steve Austin, that would probably be the one thing you have to do.
Against
Cena, Punk, Rock, even. Yep. Chris, anything? Thank you so much, by the way, for doing this.
Thanks for putting this together. No, this is great. I'm glad we had a chance to. I didn't have to either.
I don't see you thanking me.
I was not done. Thank you, Jeff, for coming on today as well, and thank you, Robert McCarron, for putting everything together.
Hopefully, you'll get a live update at some point from Jeff and I. I don't know whether we'll be doing a post NXT show that night or some other night, but
my idea, because I'm not trying to get you guys, because it would still be late there. It's going to be about 11 o'clock local time, or no, what 1 a.m. local time when that show finally ends.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to get you guys to be up at 1 a.m. calling into me to give us an update on an NXT show where it's 4 a.m. my time. Like maybe sometime during the weekend we can kind of just talk about the weekend for a half an hour to 45 minutes if everything aligns. If not, you guys enjoy your time there. Obviously, Jeff lives in California, and Chris, you're there on a vacation for yourself. So, you know, if the things align, that's great. If not, you know, we'll all talk throughout the week after WrestleMania, I'm sure.
Well, here's the deal. Chris is going to be reading during a Doug Henning biography, which floors me that someone would write a biography on Doug Henning, during Saturday, and I'll be driving home. So I'll need something to do. If you want to take a half hour out to just to talk about that fantastic Vaude Villains versus Blake and Murphy match, we can go over that.
and if we're really special, we'll have Fujinami as a guest star. And
yes. He'll grunt.
Breaking news, Steve Nash has retired from the NBA. Chris, what do you have to plug tonight?
Steve Nash. It's a podcast I do about Steve Nash's career starting today. It focuses mainly on his early days when he played for the Bucks under the name Oz. Then later moved down to here to the Lakers and the old Lakers that used to be here as Steve Sereno and a lot of good stuff. So I just do stuff on indeedwrestling.com, indeedwrestling.blogspot.com, indeedwrestling.tumblr.com, indeedwrestling.tinder.com, all sorts of things like that. And you can find me on Twitter at Mookie Ghana. And if you're out for WrestleMania weekend, I'm there Thursday to Tuesday. So I'm actually there all day Monday with no plans whatsoever. So if you also have no Raw ticket, maybe we'll meet up for a cup of coffee. I think I might meet up with someone, you know, former, not XPW. What was the MTV one?
Wrestling Society X.
Yes, I might meet up with somebody who used to have an integral part in Wrestling Society X one of those days there and have coffee with them. So
please say it was Teddy Hart. Please say Teddy Hart.
It's one of his cats.
Oh, yes, that's even better. That's the best. Jeff, what do you have to plug?
I'll see you Tuesday.
Yeah, shake them ropes, everybody.
We have kind of a roundtable thing. I'm still working on the second guest, but we're going to have Chris True, who is out of the Austin and New Orleans improv scene, Mookie, since we all have connections to wrestling and improv. And he's also part of Inspire Pro down there with one of Rob and I's favorite people, Chuck Taylor, does that as well. But and he also does some things for with spandex occasionally, even indirectly. So looking forward to having him and hopefully having the second guest that I'm working on.
The WrestleMania preview, going to be a big deal. I hope that everyone enjoys WrestleMania. I hope you guys enjoy the NXT show. And Chris, that you have a fantastic vacation in California. And we'll hopefully hear more of WrestleNomics here in the not too distant future, especially after what I think will be a exhilarating conference call next Monday with George Berrios talking everything you would ever want to know about WWE Network, or at least giving answers that kind of hide the fact that he won't give any answers. Either way, it should be fun. But thank you guys so much. And this has been Shake Them Ropes / WrestleNomics with Mookie Ghana, Chris Harrington. We'll see everybody on Tuesday for another episode of Shake Them Ropes. Bye-bye.